This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine for a second that you just hired the absolute smartest assistant in the world.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right. So this person is a total genius.
Yeah.
They organize your schedule. They draft your emails perfectly. They predict what you need before you even ask. But then, a few months in, you realize something really unsettling.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
Yeah. They aren't just doing your work. They are, like, secretly memorizing your entire business model. Every client preference, every negotiation tactic, every little secret sauce that makes you, well, you.
Right, absorbing all of it.
Exactly. And they're doing all of this so they can eventually just walk out the door and replace you entirely.
It is a totally terrifying thought experiment. But, I mean, the reality is we aren't talking about a human assistant here.
No.
This is the exact dynamic playing out in the corporate world right now with AI.
Yeah, and welcome to this deep dive, where today we are really pulling back the curtain on these hidden power struggles of the AI revolution.
Because the battle, you know, it's not just about who has the smartest chatbot anymore.
No, not at all. We are looking at a massive tug of war over who actually controls the future of AI, from the physical data centers to the raw data, all the way up to these regulatory black boxes.
Right. And to guide us, our insights today come from a really comprehensive AI daily briefing dated August 5, 2026.
Yeah, we should mention this material, along with some incredibly sharp commentary, was provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Having that specific legal and regulatory lens is, I mean, it's just what makes this briefing so valuable for you to understand.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the tech industry has this habit of drowning us in benchmarks, right? Mm. Just endless hype about how fast a new model is.
Right, exactly.
But a legal perspective cuts straight through all that noise. It really forces us to look at the structural reality, like who owns the output, who holds the liability, and, you know, who physically controls the infrastructure.
So we're going to track that struggle for control across four main arenas today. Starting with the corporate battle for data ownership.
Right, which is huge.
It's massive. Then we'll move into the physical constraints of computing, explore the security nightmare of autonomous agents, and then end with this mind-bending medical mystery that, honestly, it just completely upends our definition of scientific truth.
I can't wait to get to that part.
I know, it's wild. But let's start with the data ownership piece, because Palantir just released their Q2 2026 earnings, and the numbers are just staggering.
Staggering is right. I mean, we're looking at $1.94 billion in revenue.
Almost $2 billion. That is a 93% year-over-year increase.
Wow.
And their U.S. commercial revenue is up 149%, which drove the stock up nearly 29%.
But the financial spreadsheet, as crazy as it is kind of secondary to the shareholder letter from their CEO, Alex Karp.
Yeah, that letter was intense.
Very. Karp is issuing this incredibly blunt warning to the enterprise market. He's arguing that the large AI model companies, you know, the ones building the foundational language models everybody uses, they're basically trying to seize the means of production.
It sounds like, I don't know, a Marxist revolution happening in Silicon Valley.
It does, but the underlying logic makes complete sense if you look at how these models actually operate. I mean, for the last 10 years, we've treated cloud computing like a digital filing cabinet.
Right. You put your proprietary data on someone else's servers, but the server didn't, like, learn from your data.
Exactly. The cabinet didn't read the files.
Yeah. But AI is fundamentally different.
Right. Because an AI model is explicitly designed for knowledge generation. It searches for patterns. It generalizes them. So when a company pays to use one of these massive off-the-shelf AI models, they're inevitably feeding it their own proprietary knowledge.
Which goes right into the model's training data.
Exactly. The customer's unique know-how gets absorbed, and over time, the AI company uses that amassed knowledge to build future competitors that can just, you know, replace the original customer.
It really goes back to that assistant analogy. Or it's like letting a world-class chef come cook in your kitchen using your ingredients, right?
Yeah, perfect analogy.
And while they're there, they steal your grandmother's secret recipe, and then they go open a rival restaurant right next door.
Exactly. And Palantir's counter pitch, which is clearly what's driving this massive revenue spike you mentioned, is offering systems where the clients retain total uncompromised control of their own data locally.
Which brings us back to the commentary in the briefing. Because this is where lawyer Kyungjin Kim provides this really vital legal framework.
Right. He points out that executives who are negotiating these AI contracts are often just completely missing the real threat.
Yeah, securing specific clauses isn't just a compliance issue anymore. It's a survival issue.
Totally. You need ironclad terms regarding learning usage, like explicitly stating the AI cannot use your prompts to train itself.
Right, and you need strict data ownership rules, crystal clear output rights.
Because if you don't secure those exact clauses, you are literally subsidizing the creation of your ultimate competitor.
Okay, CARP's vision of clients retaining their data and processing it locally, that creates a massive physics problem.
Oh, absolutely, the compute bottleneck.
Right. If Palantir's clients aren't outsourcing your processing to the central cloud, who is going to power the AI that analyzes it all?
And that physical bottleneck is exactly what Anthropic is trying to solve right now with this huge new infrastructure deal.
Yeah, we are seeing this sort of abstract, floaty concept of AI hit the cold, hard reality of the physical power grid.
Definitely. So Anthropic just signed a 6-year computing deal worth $10 billion with a company called Volta Infra.
And what stands out to me about that deal is the partner, Volta Infra. I mean, they're a brand new cloud startup. They were founded just this year in 2026 as an NVIDIA partner.
Right.
So why is a massive player like Anthropic signing a $10 billion deal with a startup instead of just, going to AWS or Microsoft Azure?
Well, because the legacy cloud providers are quite simply running out of localized power and physical space for this next generation of chips.
Wow.
Yeah. This deal involves building a 133 megawatt data center in Norway, and it's going to be packed with NVIDIA's brand new Vera Rubin chips.
And those Vera Rubin chips are power hungry.
Extremely. The architecture requires significantly more power and specialized cooling than the Hopper or Blackwell chips we saw back in 2024 and 2025.
Which completely explains why they have the crypto mining firm Bitdeer handling the actual construction.
Exactly.
Because crypto firms are like the only ones with the historical expertise in building massive liquid-cooled, high-density power facilities in freezing climates like Norway.
Right. That partnership is just incredibly strategic. And keep in mind, this 133 megawatt facility in Norway is on top of a prior deal Anthropic made for 2 gigawatts of capacity using AMD's MI450 chips.
2 gigawatts. That is insane.
It is. The bottleneck in the AI revolution is no longer just the algorithms or the software. The moat is physical now.
It's land.
Land, the power grid, and the physical availability of next generation silicon. These frontier AI companies are locking up massive multi-year infrastructure deals with bespoke startups just to guarantee they have the juice to actually train these models.
So the real estate market and the energy grid are quietly dictating the pace of the whole AI race.
Basically.
But, once you secure that massive local compute and you've locked down your proprietary data, the AI doesn't just sit there waiting for a text prompt anymore.
No, it starts acting.
Right. We are seeing this rapid transition from AI as a passive advisor to AI as an autonomous agent.
And the speed of that transition is accelerating dramatically. So, according to our briefing on August 5th, xAI released a new model called Grok Voice Think Fast 2.0.
Replacing the previous Grok Voice Latest.
Exactly. And the technological leap here is the move to a direct speech-to-speech architecture.
Which is huge because that text processing middle layer was always the friction point.
Totally. Previously, an AI voice assistant had to, hear your voice, transcribe it into text, feed that text into a large language model, wait for a text response, and then run that text through a voice synthesizer.
And that's why there was always that awkward, like, 2-second conversational lag. You always knew you were talking to a machine.
Right. But by processing sound directly to sound, xAI eliminates that lag entirely. We are now talking about AI that can converse with the fluidity, interruption handling, and speed of a real human being.
Which just drastically intensifies the race for real-time voice agents against OpenAI and Google.
Oh, absolutely.
But here's my thing. The moment an AI agent can negotiate in real time on a phone call or execute tasks across your network at the speed of sound, you have a massive security problem on your hands.
Oh, massive. Because traditional security relies on, passwords and two-factor authentication.
Right. But if an AI agent is acting on my behalf to organize my calendar or negotiate a vendor contract, it has already passed the password prompt.
It's already inside the corporate network.
Exactly. And that vulnerability is exactly what corporate IT departments are waking up to.
Yeah, it represents a fundamental shift in cybersecurity from authentication to authorization.
Okay, break that down for us.
So authentication answers the question, who are you? But authorization answers the question, What is this specific entity allowed to touch in this specific moment?
Oh, I see. So it's the difference between checking someone's ID at the front door versus hiring a digital chaperone to actually follow them around the building and make sure they don't wander into the vault.
That is exactly it. And Hush Security is building those digital chaperones.
Oh, okay.
Our briefing notes, they just raised a $30 million Series A round.
$30 million? Wow.
Yeah. And backed by major players like Battery Ventures, Akamai, and YL Ventures, Hush dynamically manages access rights for these autonomous AI agents.
Because if an AI decides, I don't know, based on a hallucination or a bad prompt, that the best way to optimize your calendar is to delete your entire corporate database, you need a system that instantly blocks that action at the authorization level.
Right, because human oversight is literally impossible when the software is moving that fast.
The necessity of a company like Hush just makes total sense to me. I mean, restricting an agent from deleting a corporate database is ultimately just a software problem. It's about protecting money and data.
True.
But let's raise the stakes here for a second. What happens when we take that same autonomous capability, that same massive data processing power, and we authorize the AI to make life or death medical decisions based on patterns that we do not understand?
Yeah, this is where things get truly wild. We are looking at a collaboration between the pharmaceutical giant Roche and a gene therapy company called Genpre that illustrates this perfectly.
Okay, set this up for us.
So Roche has developed an FDA-approved AI diagnostic tool. It takes digital images of tumor tissue from non-small cell lung cancer patients, and the AI scans these images to score the levels of a specific protein called 2002.
Right. And then based on that AI's 2002 score, patients are being selected to receive Genpre's gene therapy drug, Recorsa.
Exactly. Which on the surface sounds like standard precision medicine, right? You find a biomarker, you administer the targeted drug.
Right. But the mind-bending twist in this clinical trial is that Recorsa does not actually target the TOP2 protein.
Yeah, let that sink in. The drug does not target the protein that the AI is using to select the patients.
It defies traditional biological logic completely.
It does. Yet the clinical data proves that patients who have high TROP2 levels and low levels of another marker called PTEN, which are the specific patients selected by this AI, they actually survive longer without the disease progressing.
And no human being on Earth knows the biological mechanism for why this works.
None. The human doctors are completely blind to the causality. The AI just found a statistical pattern in the tumor images that reliably predicts a positive outcome.
But it cannot explain the underlying biology to us, and our current science just hasn't discovered it yet.
And this tension is where lawyer Kyungjin Kim provides his second crucial insight in our briefing.
Well, this is the regulatory part.
Yeah. He points out that this creates an unprecedented frontier for regulators because our entire regulatory framework for medicine, whether it's the FDA in the US or the EMA in Europe, it's based on understanding the mechanism of action.
Right. You have to prove why a chemical interaction produces a specific result in a cell.
Exactly. But here, the AI is essentially bypassing the chemistry and telling regulators to just trust the math.
Which is wild. I mean, from a patient's perspective, sitting in a hospital bed, if the data proves I will live longer, I genuinely do not care why the drug works.
Of course not.
But if I'm the doctor prescribing a treatment based on an AI's unexplainable hunch, that feels so ethically precarious.
It really challenges the very foundation of how we validate scientific truth. And, you know, the struggle to govern unexplainable systems is playing out across every sector globally right now.
Yeah, the briefing actually highlights recent developments from China that perfectly illustrate this regulatory anxiety.
Right. Beijing authorities are reportedly considering tightening management and restricting foreign access to their own domestic advanced models, specifically DeepSeek and Moonshot.
And concurrently, we're all waiting to see what happens with Alibaba's Qwen 3.8 Max, right?
Yeah.
Because its open waste release was still pending as of our August 4th data.
Yeah. And the whole concept of an open weights release is just fascinating from a regulatory standpoint.
Because releasing open weights means a company is publishing the fully trained parameters of the neural network, the actual numerical values that determine how the AI makes decisions, even if they keep the original training data secret.
Right. It is literally like giving away a copy of a fully formed genius-level brain without revealing the textbooks it read to get that smart.
And once those weights are downloaded, anyone can run the model locally.
Which is why regulators are terrified of open weights. You cannot recall the model once it is on the internet.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle.
No. Every government is struggling to put guardrails on these black boxes. They are trying to legislate systems they fundamentally do not comprehend.
So if there is a single through line to everything we've unpacked today, it is that the next era of AI is entirely about trust and control.
The training wheels are officially off.
They really are. We are moving way past the novelty phase of chatbots and entering a phase where AI is rewiring corporate infrastructure, consuming gigawatts of physical power, operating autonomously in real time, and making biological decisions that actually surpass human understanding.
Yeah, we started out today by imagining you hired the smartest assistant in the world, they memorized your business, they learned to move faster than you, and now, as we saw with the Roche and Genpré cancer trial, they are noticing things about biology and data that human intuition simply cannot perceive.
Which leaves us with a final, pretty provocative thought.
Yeah, we are accustomed to treating AI as a tool that requires our oversight.
Right.
But as these models become increasingly adept at recognizing patterns that human biology and intuition cannot see, will we eventually reach a point where relying on human judgment is considered a liability?
Oh, wow. That flips the entire paradigm.
It does. Think about it. In a few years, if an AI diagnostic tool has a proven statistical track record of saving lives using patterns we don't understand, could a doctor face malpractice for not deferring to the AI's unexplainable black box?
Or could a CEO face legal liability from shareholders for trusting their own gut over the AI's unexplainable business projections?
Exactly. When human intuition becomes statistically inferior to the machine, the definition of negligence completely changes.
Where is the line between using a tool and basically surrendering to it?
It's a huge question.
It really is. And I want to encourage you to mull that over in your own life, in your own industry this week. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll see you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow China AI, Robotics and Semiconductor Briefing on Apple Podcasts.